Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Jays had a day off yesterday, well deserved. They're back tonight against the Brewers. Was it not well deserved? They won a
500
game
for the last month.
Well, maybe this will change things. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will change things. You know who I'm concerned about? George Springer a little bit.
Why? The injury?
It's like he's a little bit of a Band-Aid, no?
Well, do we have an update on the injury? Because, yeah, he was hurt last year, but I haven't seen anything that suggests
that he's
getting long-term now.
Undergoing more tests on his elbow.
Yeah.
I don't love that.
Yeah. More tests? Yeah, more tests can be fine. More tests is
look
just,
at you
hey,
being an optimist.
Sure. Being cautious. I like tonight. We got a good pitching matchup. It's Alec Manoah on the mound, ERA of 2.
Gotta love every time he's out there, we love
8
it.
And 2. Well, okay, I will say this, though, about the Blue Jays is I don't really love how much it feels like the import of Manoah wins, not the bonus of Manoah wins, if that makes sense, is that you go, oh, you got your ace on the mound. It should be a win night. That's a awesome. Not, oh, my God, you need Manoah to win tonight. Which is how it's felt a little bit more lately, which it really has. And I actually was going to talk about this the other day, and we'll talk about this with Ben Ennis in a couple minutes because he slept in and he forgot that he was supposed to do this. Oh, 100%. What do you mean? Ben. Like, I just called him and I went, did you forget? And he went, yeah.
I'm in bed.
Yeah. He's asleep. So we'll see what kind of, you know, performance we get here from this guy. I think that you're really going to start to feel the expectations for the Blue Jays ramp up. I thought that I was listening to Jamie Campbell actually on Tim and Friends at the during the post game show during the afternoon game this week, and he mentioned how he felt there was a shift during the Yankee series, and I thought he nailed it. I thought Jamie Campbell absolutely nailed it in that discussion where he went, people started to measure the Jays against the Yankees, and what I think is going to happen here over the next coming weeks is that the Blue Jays are going to start to measure their team against the creme de la creme. And they're going to start saying, okay, this has been a fun start to the season. It's been a roller coaster ride of fun of a season, but we went dipped to start. And then it was up, 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 up. And now it's kind of plateaued. Now we're at a part in the roller coaster where it's like we're kind of turning a corner and it's a little bit slow and we're not really sure exactly what's
going up or you're going down.
Exactly. What is coming next? What is going to be the next turn on the roller coaster ride that has been this season? And I just know that whatever it is, there's going to be expectations now. We thought there was expectations earlier in the season, but people could couch it with, hey, it was early when they were struggling, and when they were doing great, nobody ever has a nit to pick. Now it's going to be real. You've got a Brewers team and then divisional games. And I think that we're going to start to feel this now. Like, we've already seen with the bullpen, like, the condition that it's in. It's going to turn to July. We're going to have, I think, more red jerseys, despite, Ryan Goins saying, what feels like a decade ago now, that the Blue Jays should shred these suckers. But, yeah, I just think that this is now, we're entering expectations time. And the Blue Jays are going to just be judged differently. The conversations are going to be different. Our attention is going to be on them in a different way. Like, there's no more Stanley Cup Finals that involves a really sexy matchup. There's no Golden State Warriors redemption narrative. There's no, are the Raptors going to trade OG Anunoby at the draft? It's going to be some, in this market anyways, people looking out and trying to see what the Leafs do in 2 weeks because it's no longer Canada Day. The NHL free agency bumped it back, and they're trying to ruin everybody in media's summers. Say, like, poor Kipper and Bourne. They have to do their whole hour show. 2 more weeks. It's just Blue Jays time. And it's expectations time. And now everybody, it's going to be a whole different level of scrutiny. Ben Ennis from his bedroom, waking up abruptly. He's the meme of that little kid who, like, is in the prison, and they wake him up, and he's like, grabs his blanket, and he's screaming and yelling. I take it that you got no producer reminder. What was the deal here today? How do you explain yourself?
Well, I mean,
you clear your throat before you start with professional.
No, that is my throat right now. That's what you get. No, normally there's a more formalized procedure before I go on the program. We just had, you know, an informal chat about coming on this program at 7 o'clock this morning. And the formal procedure is usually a producer sending me a text, having a phone call with me, and then I put information in my calendar. But yeah, I didn't do that.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We won't blame you. We're down our producer Daniele this week. He's doing okay. He's supposed to be on the mend, but okay. Before we get, this is tough. I'm almost reluctant to throw this at you. Do you want a Blue Jays warm up before I ask you? You and I used to do the worst franchise rankings, and it was a favorite of mine, right? A summer favorite. And yesterday, the Sacramento Kings did the thing. It was like, I'm not gonna do the thing everybody thinks I'm going to do and freak out, man, and take the guy that no one has at number four, and they do it. So I want you to think about this right now. Like, have the Sacramento Kings, because we've always had the Pittsburgh Pirates there, right? But now the Pittsburgh Pirates have that 6'7" shortstop that I love and I've never seen play, but he's 6'7".
Yankee?
Well, probably, but I think that we can't put Pittsburgh. You can't put a team with a 6'7" shortstop as dead last in the power rankings. It's like, that's worth the price of admission. That can't even be the worst baseball team right now, right? Like, I got to figure, like, it's what, the Royals? Who do you think?
Well, the Royals have Bobby Witt Jr., though. You know, like, both of those teams have pretty exciting players. I think it's still, like, the Pirates are still, their number one goal is not to win baseball games. So I think that kind of, like, that shoots them up the rankings quite a bit. Their whole goal is to have this beautiful ballpark, these beautiful uniforms, play in this very winnable division, and not win baseball games.
Yeah. They're so stoked up there. They're just watching them lose. Like, let's do this thing. Let's do this. Another loss. We did it. We nailed it. I think that there's a stronger case for the Oakland Athletics than people realize, even though they've been like, because you don't even have the nice ballpark. Like, your ballpark is a sewer. You have nothing nice. Nobody cares about you. You might be gone at some point. You've got also beautiful uniforms, like maybe the most beautiful in all of sports. But it's like, it's almost worse where, like, they do get kind of good, and then the second they do, it's like, no. Like, everybody's gone. And they're not the Rays where it, like, has turnover into success. It's always like, oh, no, it's not going to be so hot for a little while. It's not going to be great. But either way, like, I think that the Sacramento Kings, that it's like, what's worse than that in sports is having, I think there's the two worst things that can happen to you in professional sports if you're a real sports fan of all the, like, major North American leagues is number one, and this is my other, was the kind of secondary question off it, is they're tied maybe together, or I don't know how to separate them, but it's like passing on a quarterback that you believe in a draft and then the quarterback hits, or passing on an NBA star and then taking a different guy the pick right after. Like, the Sacramento Kings have taken Thomas Robinson, Jimmer Fredette, and I'm blanking on who the
Marvin
Bagley Jr.
Yeah.
All three picks in front of Klay Thompson, Luka Doncic, and Damian Lillard.
It's not what you want.
No, it's not. It's really not what you want. You think there's anything more like, which one do you think is more torturous? Taking a NFL quarterback miss or NBA superstar miss and a bust in front?
Well, it's hard to really screw up your franchise if you have a good quarterback, but I guess it's possible. It is impossible to screw up an NBA franchise if you have a superstar superstar player. It is like, you are at least a playoff team if you draft a superstar. But it should also be noted that taking the just universally decided, agreed upon player at a certain spot doesn't necessarily mean that that player is going to be great. Now, it does when it's Luka Doncic, and you've met with him for, like, weeks and weeks and weeks.
And you didn't take him because Vlade Divac didn't like his papa?
That's right. But if you're the Raptors and it's Scotty Barnes and everybody's mad at you, then, you get all the kudos because you're smarter than everybody.
That liked Barnes over Jalen Suggs. That's why you bring it up. But that's the thing, though. If you have a track record of being the Toronto Raptors and nailing the 27th pick and the 23rd pick and undrafted free agents, and like you don't really have a miss on the resume other than Bruno Caboclo. Like you took Norm Powell in the second round, DeLon Wright 20. Like you go through the Raptors track record and it's just like you're allowed to do that if you're Masai, and especially when the guy wins Rookie of the Year. I agree with you. Like the consensus is not always correct. Like I remember how consensus Brady Quinn was, for example.
That's right.
Like when the Dolphins passed on Brady Quinn, it was, oh my God, I can't believe they passed on Brady Quinn. They took Ted Ginn Jr. It wasn't like they drafted a Hall of Famer, but still you do Ted Ginn Jr. over Brady Quinn's career 10 times out of 10. You're right. The consensus is something that's not always great. But when you're the Sacramento Kings, I actually think that it's like, hey, guys, let's try the consensus. You know, let's see what the other people think for
because, what. Because, I mean, here's why you do that. Because groupthink is actually better than the decisions the people that have been hired to make basketball decisions have been doing over the last two decades. Honestly, go back and look at the last two decades of trades and signings and draft picks.
I know.
And then look at what
everyone else,
the average basketball fan would have done. If we had just operated the Sacramento Kings through a Twitter poll over the last 20 years, they would definitely have been in the playoffs at least. Well, they would have had Luka, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They might
Nobody
have had a championship.
Had Marvin Bagley ahead of him. Like that,
somebody should be pushing for this. Well, their owner is some big tech guy. Why doesn't he say, you know what? What we've done isn't working. We're actually just going to give the power to the masses. The fans now control this team.
Yeah,
we have no general manager.
Here's the thing. You assume that a big tech guy is a good owner to have right now because it's like, oh, these are self-made men with unlimited budgets, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the assumption that you make. But then you remember that, like, when in practice, like more ex machina, you know, where it's, oh, you're completely removed from reality. You live in a bunker in the woods underground trying to make a robot that you'll sleep with, you know? Like, it's not good. It's not great. Think about some of these dudes. Like, would you want Elon Musk running your NBA franchise right now? Hell no. Like, no chance would you want that. Like, people, whatever your political opinions are on Elon Musk for whatever reason got so political all of a sudden. But it's like, yeah, I don't think that you want Vivek Redditi Dev running an NBA franchise based on the fact that he's a billionaire who seems completely removed from reality. Did you not remember the Stauskas clip? It's like,
oh my God.
Hey, nobody say anything to this guy other than the thing he wants to hear so that you keep getting your paychecks. And we've seen this time and time again. You got a bunch of yes men around you. You're going to make a lot of bad decisions. And so, like, I don't know, man. You trust Vlade Divac and he goes, hey, what about this Luka guy? I'm hearing a lot about him. Says like he's like an unprecedented figure in the
You know, he's dominating this pro league, you know, the second best league in the world as like an 18-year-old.
Yeah. What's up with him? Like, why wouldn't we consider him? And then Vladdy's like, these other guys, tall from Duke, and he's nothing to do with father. He's nothing to do with father. Yes, I hate his father, but it's nothing to do with that. It's like, maybe he just solicit one outside of opinion. Ailish, which one do you think is worse, quarterback or NBA superstar?
NBA superstar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, the Kings have done it so many times that it just becomes a trend. And you're consistently, when you get into the draft, except for you yesterday, putting in the wake and rake. You just know in your gut.
Here's the thing, though. So, Ennis, it was -160 that Jalen Ivey went with the fourth pick. And I went, okay, I've been following this now for a month and a half, and I've yet to see one mock draft that doesn't have him at four, either with a trade or the Sacramento Kings just going, hey, okay, listen, what. We're the team that always does this. We can't do this again and have it not work out. And then they were like, no, we will. We absolutely will. So yeah, I put big money down on this. It was one of my highest confidence plays ever, but it was like, but
yeah,
I really
you were like, this is my favorite pick I've ever selected.
I couldn't have, but what did I say right after that? I said, so, which means it's going to be wrong.
You did.
And it, and
justified.
I was like, and I'm putting faith in the Sacramento Kings. I just like, I honestly sat there. How do you watch the draft, by the way? Do you guys do TV and Twitter?
No, I try not to do Twitter because it's like, you already know, two picks before.
I don't like it.
I can't do any sports without Twitter anymore. I really can't live my life in any form or fashion without Twitter. So
Twitter
is always involved. You're off?
I tweet all the time.
Well, that's part of the reason why Twitter's been so great recently, yeah.
No, that's actually wrong. It's like, I tweet, I post and ghost. I post and I ghost. And that's it. And it's the way to live. And I love the idea of like people getting mad at any of my tweets and yelling into the void. Like it's just, it's actually one of my favorite things to think about sometimes. It's just like, yeah, you have like a very short window of time that I might see you reply on a tweet. Like it's a very, very short window, but then I mute it and I don't even remember that that tweet exists unless it like really pops off, unless the tweet gets really big.
So then like, why are you tweeting again? Like what is the purpose?
That's true.
What if you're just sending
disturb
a tweet
into
the void, why don't you, instead of tweeting, your great little piece of information, your great little take, why don't you write it down on a little piece of paper, get your pen, and you write it down, you put little exclamation points, and then what you do with the piece of paper is you crumple it up and throw it in the garbage.
Yeah,
okay.
Those are called my text messages to you. Like that's all. Like I just do that in text form. Because you serve a Twitter audience, right? Like you still try to entertain through the medium. It's just like I just think that it overall is. I can't deal with any more people that have meltdowns over sports jokes or takes. Like I looked at it even a little bit the other day with like Kadri scores the goal and I'm like, good trade, Kyle. You know, just that tweet. And I had dudes in my DMs messaging me because that's how people get to me sometimes. Like dudes messaging me like, actually, Kyle Dubas did this and Dubas did it. And I'm just so mad. And people freaking out over it, like being angry. And I'm like, you're mad. You're actually mad at this. Like, it just, it boggles the mind. Anyways, who cares? I'm not going to complain about Twitter anymore. I just think it's a good strategy for mental health and just sanity and also keeping your, like, sports takes your sports takes rather than letting them get hijacked by other people. Anyway, Sacramento Kings, maybe read your mentions so that you get influenced just a tiny bit. You actually need the influencing just a tiny little bit. Okay, so Toronto Blue Jays back at it tonight. It's Manoa. I said just before you came on, just as you were waking up, you know, just as you were like, you know, knocking the sleep out of your eyes. It does feel a little bit too urgent when they have Manoa on the mound right now than I would like it to be. That it doesn't feel like, oh, it's bonus win night. That it's like, oh, they need this win tonight. Oh, they need this one tonight. Oh, they need 6-7 innings tonight. And that it's going to feel this way over the next couple of weeks. It's going to really start to ramp up here. I guess just like, Do you agree that we're here, right? That we're in expectations land and that once they hit that Rays and Red Sox series, like the tone of the conversations around the Blue Jays are going to shift kind of materially.
No, I think the tone is already shifting. I mean, they haven't played very good baseball recently. I would say
500 the last month.
The talk about the rotation is a little bit overstated. I mean, Barrios had a really rough outing, his last outing, but so did Lucas Giolito. But before that, he had three spectacular outings where he was striking out a ton of batters, and that wasn't all against cream puffs either. Kevin Gausman has totally figured it out. Kevin Gausman has also Kevin Gausman has also been on the receiving end of some horrible, horrible batted ball luck over his last five starts. If you go back and
I was at one of those starts, and it didn't really seem too bad a luck when the Orioles were like slapping every single baseball to the moon. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was his worst start of the season, right? One of the worst starts of his career.
I thought the worst start of his season was when we thought he was tipping pitches against the Twins.
No. Well, he actually went four innings in that start. He went 2 1/3 against the Orioles. Manoa's last start was no good either against the Yankees, right? And that's a team that he normally dominates. How dare you disrespect the name of Ross Stripling? Also,
I love Ross Stripling,
who dominated against the Royals and Tigers, but then also the White Sox, who it should be recalled had an ERA under 4 for his first full seasons in the major leagues of baseball, where he was a swingman, but he made about half of his appearances as starts with the Los Angeles Dodgers, who, I mean, when we look back at that trade, it might have been one of the bigger coups over this generation of Blue Jays moves. No, this is important, I would say. The bats look pretty alive. The bullpen looks in total shambles. Jimmy Garcia had a side injury in that final game of the White Sox series, and we don't know the extent of it. We might be looking at a situation where it's like Romano in the ninth, and then Adam Simber in any high leverage in the eighth, and then, like, after him, David Phelps, but then, like, after him, Trent Thornton. Like, Trent Thornton's rise up the leverage rankings is frighteningly quick. The Blue Jays bullpen.
Benny,
needs
I bought
help.
Trent Thornton stock because of who he was compared against, right? Like, I got so sick of watching Trevor Richards that when Trent Thornton would come in, I would start to go, Is Trent decent yeah. now? Like, is he no. all right? And it's like, no, he's not. It's just that you don't know any better. You don't know how to live properly.
No. If the Blue Jays cannot pull off a trade, and nobody's pulling off a trade for a reliever, despite the fact that this is around the time that they pulled off the Simber and Richards trades last year. The season also started about a week, 7 days later than last season, so it's not quite the exact same time of the year that it was last year when they pulled off those trades. But if they can't pull off one of those trades, we need to just see something, right? We don't Maximo, the guy they called up, doesn't look like he's the answer when, like, the first two batters he faces hit moonshots, and then the third guy hits one to the base of the wall. I would love to see what this Adrian Hernandez fella has in Buffalo with the Bisons. He throws a screwball, which kind of, it just looks like it's unlike anything you've ever seen before. Yeah, the bullpen is the biggest issue for this team right now. There's just no doubt about it. And the rotation, honestly, is, especially at the end of the year when this team is in the playoffs, I think you're going to look at the top three and say that you could put those three guys against anybody in baseball.
So I agree with just about everything you said. I don't know if I'm all the way there with Gausman yet. I still have some nerve. I still have some nerves when he's on the mound right now, just considering, like, how important he is. I don't love that Barrios seems to be like, hey, once every four outings, I'm going to give up, like, an absolute, junk performance. I think that you're right, that overall, I really don't have complaints about the rotation, and I certainly don't when Ross Stripling's playing the way that he is. Okay, with that, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
So you mentioned the Blue Jays bullpen thing, and this is the chew for the day, which is everybody focuses on the teams with good bullpens, right? Because they want to compare. They go, why don't the Jays have a bullpen like the Dodgers? Why don't they have a bullpen like the Yankees? Why don't they have a bullpen like Houston? Houston's had, like, an incredible bullpen this year. Like Milwaukee with Josh Hader, right? Like all the good teams, some of these teams leading their division. The something to chew on here is that there's actually a bunch of teams that are in the mix for the postseason this year that need bullpen help. Like, if you go to Fangraphs and you look at bullpen war, you look at bullpen ERA, whatever statistic you want to look at over the last month, and you zone in on the Toronto Blue Jays, Minnesota, who I think is, like, I don't know how much they're actually going to be willing to spend, but their run differential is only two off the Blue Jays. They're in a weaker division, and they're... I think they're tied for their division lead, but they've played more games. I can't remember if they're tied or they're one game back or whatever it is.
Cleveland just passed them recently.
Cleveland just passed them. Okay, so, but Minnesota's right there. The Boston Red Sox have not been able to find a guy in the back end of their bullpen, like, consistently. Like, Robles has been awful this year. Like, they have had a tire fire at the back end of that bullpen. The St. Louis Cardinals are desperately looking for bullpen help. I don't know. The Texas Rangers spent a lot of money this year. They're kind of actually in the mix. They're only 4.5 games back. The White Sox, a team that the Toronto Blue Jays just saw, who probably don't count themselves out either, have had a bad bullpen despite missing their closer. They're 17th in bullpen ERA. The something to chew on here is, like, should we be a little bit more concerned about the relief pitching market than we originally anticipated? Because you mentioned it. Like, last year, the Adam Simber trade gets made 5 days from what today is. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the market is a little bit more aggressive this year.
Well, there's more teams with aspirations of
that's what I
playoff
mean.
Berths, right? Yeah, well, but it is also the position in which there's more turnover than any other, and there's more availability, right? Like, there's There are tiers, though. There's definitely tiers. Yep. There's guys that are under team control for longer. There's guys who are reclamation projects. There's guys with better peripheral numbers who are not performing necessarily at the surface level in Major League Baseball. There's a lot of relievers. And especially considering the upgrades that you need, the bar to be an upgrade on Trent Thornton is not that high. Like, honestly. You can talk about the top of
the pitcher like that.
Minor
leaguer.
You can literally Sergio Romo used to be one of the better relievers in all of baseball.
Yeah, but 100 years ago, he's 100. Yeah. Like I remember him on late night shows winning World Series. Like, come on, it's like
he's been DFA'd. Like, he's available. Yeah. If the Blue Jays want to go get him, they can. And I would advocate for them at least trying that, because again, like tomorrow, well tonight. Trent
so
Thornton.
Is Eric Gagne, you know, like it's just like
Eric Gagne, pitched very well in the World Baseball Classic like 6 years ago. So
Mariano Rivera available. Whoa, you could get him. Never pry him from Trump's like Mar-a-Lago. He would never leave. He's in Mar-a-Lago. Well, he's never leaving.
Yeah, Goose Gossage, same deal. There's lots of relievers available, but you are right that there's an additional wild card team. I mean, the Mariners. I didn't see how they fared last night, but the Mariners were tied on record with the Orioles going into yesterday.
Yeah.
But they were only 8 games back of the second wild card. They just went out and signed the reigning American League Cy Young Award winner. Do you think the Mariners are like packing it in? I guess maybe if they
Mariners
go on another five.
Mariners' run differential is only -3 too. Like, right. They've actually kind of been hard luck losers.
Well, but now, yeah. But remember, they were like in and around the playoffs last year with like a -150 run differential. So maybe this is, things turning around for them.
I'm just saying, imagine being only, like Oakland is minus, there's some hilarious run differentials. Detroit is minus 100, but Oakland is minus 109 run differential in June is incredible. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, even the Angels, like the Shohei Ohtani stuff is starting to really ramp up, considering he is not all about the money, and he's only a year and a half away from free agency, where he's going to make $55 million a year over 10 years on the open market.
He went back-to-back nights where he hits 8 RBIs, and the next night he gets 13 strikeouts, both career highs back-to-back.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And the start was against the Royals, but still, like, that guy is doing it again. Like, it's unbelievable. Like Aaron
Nobody
Judge
cares.
Is having this otherworldly season. Aaron Judge is going to hit 75 home runs, and Shohei Ohtani's like, yeah, give me that, when it comes to the American League MVP by the end of the season. No, there's just, like, you can almost name the teams on 3 fingers that are out of it already in the American League. I guess the Orioles are, but like I said, if I'm not counting out the Mariners, the Orioles aren't. Yeah, the Tigers and the Royals. And that's it. Everybody else is kind of in it. Now, there is still more than a month until the trade deadline, which I think is early August.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, there's a lot of teams looking for relievers. Luckily, there are a lot of relievers to be had, but Blue Jays would be wise to acquire one before these 8 straight games against teams that are basically a half game behind them.
This was my point of
like I still think they're going to make the playoffs, and I think they're going to make it rather easily, but they're only, 2 games inside the playoffs in the American League?
Yeah, and if you look at, you and I used to do Is This Anything? The Blue Jays are 5th in the American League in run differential. And, yeah, they got off to a slow start, and they've got a tough bullpen, but I kind of think that's a something. I just think it's a something in the sense of they were projected by many to be the best team in the American League. And if you go by run differential, which is not an everything stat, it's not a catch-all, they've had a really, really difficult schedule. Like, again, there's lots of different caveats here, but to be 5th in run differential in the American League in essentially July is something that I think is a little surprising. And, I thought that they would be really, really pushing to set the market again for a relief pitcher, because I don't think anyone's as desperate as them. And the reason why I don't think anyone's as desperate as them is because they don't have a single guy in the bullpen outside of the closer that I trust to get a strikeout in a big spot. Like, they don't have a single guy.
Yeah, Jimmy Garcia had turned into that guy. He was the guy that the Blue Jays expected
Jimmy
him
Garcia's
to be when they signed him in the offseason.
Are completely out of kilter with, or off kilter.
No, but had you seen him recently?
Yeah, of course. But that's the thing.
No, he looked like a very reliable...
In two outings. Two outings in a row that he was good, and that's basically the sample we're working off of right now. I'm just saying, if Jimmy Garcia is your, like, guy coming out of the bullpen, given the season that he's given you, like, which has been, again, up and down, I think that tells you pretty much where you're at this year. The Blue Jays last I checked, they were 25th in K per 9 out of the bullpen. Like, that's just not good enough. Like, you need... The league is about swing and miss, Ben. You know that better than anybody, and they don't have it, and they got to go out and get it. Like, and again, it worries me because I just think that is the one of the most coveted things in baseball right now.
It is, but again, like I said, it's not the value isn't. I mean, on the trade market, the value is still at its lowest, right? Like, it's not as valuable as getting an everyday player. It's not as valuable as trying to acquire a starter, which they also probably need. But, yeah, not an upper-end starter.
Yeah, but they can go get some, like, whatever, scrap heap starter at the end of, you know,
exactly.
The deadline kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, the rotation is not as in as dire straits as the bullpen by any stretch of the imagination, because you're probably talking about, you know, somebody getting injured for a couple of weeks and a spot fill-in starter. You're not talking about somebody who should be starting a playoff series for you.
No, you just need a guy who's a buffer between you and Thomas Hatch pitching a meaningful game.
That's
what I would say is the thing that you need.
Ideally, a guy that you can, you know, make up an injury for Yusei Kikuchi for a couple of weeks, and then that guy can start.
Well,
we all get a break. Our eyes get a break from watching Yusei Kikuchi, because that's been difficult.
I have a tweet in the drafts of Tanner Roark. Kikuchi that I you know, it's he's like one or two starts away from it.
At least Tanner Roark got it over with, right? Like, Tanner Roark, at least you got to see homers. That was cool.
It was
awesome to see, like, home runs. That's the most exciting thing in the sport. It's not great when it's happening against your team, but you got to see it. Like, there's nothing worse than a guy throwing 300 pitches over an inning in two thirds and walking six guys.
I can't remember if it was bullpen Tanner Roark or if it was his last start as a Blue Jay where they brought him back for that, like, the 2021 season. They were like, nah, like, it's not as bad as you guys think it is. And then he came out and it was just like, bang, bang, bang. And then the next day it was like, Tanner Roark, gone forever, like, never to be heard from again. I think the Braves signed him to, like, a minor league deal. But, yeah, God, that was so funny. Depressing, but also funny. $12 million a year for Tanner Roark. A pretty good deal for him. I think the same contract as Kikuchi, anyway. Just one less year. Anyway, Ben Ennis, thank you for waking up. You actually just, like, you can tell Ben is a father because he wakes up and he's alert and he's ready to rock and roll. You know, he's got that panic moan braid where he's like, wait, what's happening? What do I have to do? Like, is there a fire? It's a fire. What's the procedure? What's the procedure? You know, he's ready to roll, Ailish.
My blood is already coffee. So, that's how that works.
Out of baby. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for making time. Ben Ennis of Fan Drive Time. Questionable thoughts and opinions from him, as always. When we come back, Nick Kiprios of Real Kipper and Born. Does the series end tonight? And who has the biggest stake in the legacy discussion? That's next on the Fan Morning Show with JD and Ailish, Sports at 590 The Fan.
At 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, JD and Ailish. A little Friday night hockey tonight, a little Jays action. Could be the last hockey game we watch in a while. Let's ask our buddy Nick Kiprios from Real Kipper and Born. You think the series is over tonight, Kipper?
June 24th, Ailish, I hope so.
Yeah, you still got weeks of the show, though. You can't mail it in yet.
I know. There's the draft. There's free agency. Next thing you know, Labor Day weekend.
Cutting into little Buddha time, I tell you that.
Oh, is there any time for little Buddha between that and the next season? But we'll see.
I can answer that. Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Jay. I really believed, I think, going into the last game that this was just going to shape up to be this homer series. that for whatever reason, there just seems to be a comfort zone being back home, the wide margin of scores, and yet that overtime really changed, I think, again, the way most people feel that Colorado should be at home now with their comfort zone there. There's every reason to put this away, but once upon a time, I was involved in a seven-game series in 1994, and we had this comfort zone of coming back home, and everybody was talking about who's coming in town and where is everybody going to be after the game, and what are you staying for the parade, and Vancouver won. Okay. And Vancouver won the next game? Yeah, okay. And now we're in game seven and we're all pooping our pants right now? Oh, okay. And that's always the danger for Colorado, is that they get ahead of themselves, and champions over there aren't ready to relinquish. And now you got a series. But we'll see. They seem to be in the right frame of mind going into tonight. That's for sure, as Colorado is concerned.
Well, the end of that game, I think, certainly shifted my perspective as well. Tampa looked just completely overwhelmed and exhausted in overtime. Yes. It to me seemed like maybe their previous runs or their injuries had caught up to them and really just displayed itself, and not a great feeling for momentum going into tonight's game. Is that how you viewed it, with a little bit of injuries and exhaustion really taking a toll?
Yeah, Ailish, you nailed it. This was a boxing match, we'd be watching Muhammad Ali at the end of his career do this rope-a-dope where you continue to take the punches and you hope that you're still standing up, but you know that it's pretty much over here. And Cernak goes down. They're down to 5D. Ryan McDonough, who's been so good for them for so long, looked really ordinary and tired, and got caught flat-footed on the overtime Kadri goal. And you're actually left with even more admiration for Vasilevskiy. And it kind of got me kind of revisiting the last 2.5-3 years of really how good Vasilevskiy's been. And how many times he saved the baking of Tampa. And I don't want to take anything away from their stars and what Stamkos has done the last 2.5-3 years, and Kucherov and Braden Point. But, man, it always comes back to either great pitching, a quarterback, or goaltending in the National Hockey League. And Vasilevskiy, to me, was a prime example of almost pulling it off last game when you know your team probably didn't deserve it. And that's just how good Vasilevskiy is, and that's the danger for Colorado tonight, that this guy can almost single-handedly get Tampa Bay back to a game seven. That's how good he is. So again, first 5-10 minutes will tell a lot about whether or not Tampa Bay's ready to let go or not.
Yeah, so that overtime period with Vasilevskiy, I thought that he made like three, just like 10 bell saves where
it's that right leg that you think is down and out.
I know. And like that, even that one like kick save that he made to just clear the puck, where I go like, dude, this guy's a straight up, he's a genius. Like, he is an athletic phenom. To be that size and be able to move his lower body that way and that confidently and be that in the moment locked in, like, he is truly, truly, truly special, right? Like, and the problem with it was, though, Tampa couldn't get the puck down the ice. Yeah. So it's like, hey, Vasilevskiy, you have a big advantage here. You need to be able to shoot the puck on the other goalie in order to win the hockey game. And I don't know if I have a lot of faith in Tampa doing that for some of the reasons that Ailish outlined. But, okay, so Vasilevsky's legacy, I think, is pretty well secure, right? Like, this is a guy who I think is probably still going to win another Vezina in his career. He's another guy who he has his cups. I think he's already on the Mount Rushmore of goaltenders, Kipper. Like, I really do. I think that he has taken the reins of the goaltender of this era. We'll see what ends up happening with Shesterkin, and, you know, the price thing is like a little bit muddy because he did make that run last year. But either way, I think that we acknowledge the brilliance of this guy. The rest of the team, though, Tampa, like we were talking about this earlier, like, it feels like they lost a huge opportunity from a legacy standpoint. Like, to have the three straight cups, to get in the conversation with, like, that Islanders team, to be, like, in doing it in a salary cap era, it felt so big, the stakes for these guys. And now I'm sort of looking at it like, all right, you beat Montreal last year, you won a bubble cup, you're a good team, but you're not a great team. And you definitely don't ever get to be like dynasty, and that's not how we look back on those Chicago teams, Kings teams, like that. You don't get dynasty for back-to-back cups. So it feels like they lost a lot. But who do you think has the most to gain tonight? Like, if Colorado wins this sucker, who has the most to gain for them legacy standpoint wise? Yeah, like, is it just simple? Is it Makar?
I'm listening to your theory here. I don't think they're going to lose a lot. But all there right. is, to your point, they're going to lose something. There's a big difference between 2 and 3 and whether or
yeah,
not you
huge.
Get into a conversation with the Islanders and the Montreal yep. Canadiens,
yep.
Edmonton Oilers.
With a cap, Kipper. With a cap.
For sure. For sure. And even with those dynasties, those teams, once they cross the threshold, they never really looked back when they were in their prime. And even with this team, Tampa Bay, there was always these hiccups. And I look at this season and I look at they went through a stretch of the last 3 weeks of the regular season. You're like, they're done. They're tired. It's over. And then Vasilevsky finds a way to pull them out.
Yeah.
And then against Toronto and the Rangers, and then even to start this series, you're like, you keep going and they're like, they're cooked. They're done. They're like a Burger King Whopper. They got grill marks on their ass. It's over. And yet they keep pulling themselves out. So I think as far as like a character championship team, they should be regarded as one of the better ones in history, even at 2 and not crossing over to the third. The never quit led by Vasilevsky should keep them in very high regards as a Stanley Cup champion historically, for me anyways. And we'll see where that character takes them tonight, and whether or not they go away quietly, which they haven't in the past, which I think sets up for an interesting game. But you're right, losing a Stanley Cup here doesn't quite get them in that big conversation. But for me, a lot of character over there, and well-earned, I think, over the last 3 years.
In terms of the other side of it, Colorado, I feel like, and JD and I touched on it, becomes that, I know this is that funny Cale Makar quote, but the whole legacy versus dynasty, I really do feel like this solidifies a lot of these players in the conversation of being elite. Cale Makar is going to win a Conn Smythe, a Norris, and a Cup in the same week, as we said. McKinnon really gets to say he's the first of the McDavid Matthews trio to win a cup. What do you think is the outlook on how we view this team finally getting to the point that they get to hoist the Stanley Cup for the first time since like 2001?
Yeah, I think we'll look at them no different than others in the past, historically, Ailish, that you take your bumps and you move on, and that old famous line that at times I've accused of being overused is lessons learned, and Colorado would be able to use that in this. But, you know, Nathan McKinnon, no different than any other champion star player that had to wait and wait and finally get over that threshold. And we've talked about that with Stevie Yzerman. We've talked about that with Ovechkin, and it doesn't take multiple cups. It just takes one for us to look at you in a different light. And that will be the case if they can close out 60 minutes, especially for Nathan McKinnon, regarded constantly as the second best player in the world, you know, past McDavid. And yet we'll look at him in a complete different light after tonight if they win. And that's what championships do, and that's what I think that others, including, you know, Austin Matthews and the Mitch Marners of the world, and any other young player can understand, that it's great you can get all these accolades and individual awards and have individual records and all of that, but we won't look at you quite the same way as we do others until you lift that holy grail above your head.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I when I look at legacy potential, though, those guys, like Makar's 23, And yeah, he stacks up those awards that we're talking about right now and has his entire career in front of him. Like, it's
and there's
quite
a trickle effect, JD. There's a trickle effect that goes well beyond, of course, you know, the McKinnons and the McCars of the world. But then you start drifting down the lineup and Naz Kadri. Come on. Like, where was he a few years ago? People wanted to run this guy out of town and kicked out of the league. And the constant suspensions in the playoffs. And he's no good. He's bad for the league. Look at where he is right now going into tonight with his legacy.
Yeah, dude, I completely agree. I need to – I'm saving this. Like, we have to break on time today because we have Raptors general manager Bobby Webster in the next block. And
get rid of me now.
Yeah, see you, bud.
We got to go. We got to go. And by the way, again, Friday, it's going to be Little Buddha night for sure. Nice weekend. But I actually cannot wait to talk to you about, Kadri summer, because I know you know that camp. I know you know what he's thinking. I have some fears. I need you to talk me through some. Yeah, exactly. You're already laughing because you already know. That's next week. Okay,
next week.
We got to do Kadri fear rankings and Kadri legacy and Kadri look back once he actually hoists it.
That's right.
Nick Kyprios again. Big Buddha.
Sit back. drinkobs.com. It'll take you a Little Buddha right to the front door.
Correct.
Or the back of your dock. Mm-hmm. Just sit back and relax, and we'll talk next
back
week.
Back of your dock. That's nice. That was nice. All right. Nick Kyprios, real Kyprium born, king of Little Buddha. Thanks for making time, buddy.
Have a great one tonight.
See you, pal. Huge legacy potential. I also think that there's something, like, again, to be said for the timing that these guys could win being right now, as opposed to, like, imagine. So let's say Colorado loses. How much harder is it to get guys back on friendly deals? I don't know. Maybe there's the chip on the shoulder thing. Maybe this is the disease of Moore that gets talked about, like, in the book of basketball. But I think this is going to happen. I think that guys are potentially going to sacrifice to keep this together. We saw it with the Raptors with the run it back thing when guys like Danny Green were like, oh, I'll stay. And there's more money in hoops, but I really do believe that this is going to work in Colorado's favor to have that crowd, this momentum, these Hall of Famers. Some guys might want to stay a part of that for $1 million less. Let's take a break. Bobby Marks, the Bobby Hour, Bobby's World, Bobby Marks and Bobby Webster in the 8 o'clock hour. All things Christian Coloco, all things NBA draft. That's next, and NBA offseason. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with JD Naylor, Sports at 590 The Fan.